Welcome again to Nightlife. My name is Jordan on this Mother's Day Sunday. I want to start talking tonight as we continue our series on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. I want to start talking about games, the games that we play. I'm not really a gamester, personally. Not really into playing games, you know, board games and little party games and stuff like that. And I think really the reason I'm not into playing games is because I'm into playing games. It's because when I play games, I kind of get intense. And I get so intense that it's not much fun for me. You know? So, I don't need any comments from the peanut gallery. I don't know, when a game happens, I've got a competitive streak, but it's not even just that. It's just that, you know, I only have two gears, you know? And so I sort of concentrate, and I get absorbed, and pretty soon the game's no fun for me. And shortly after that, the game's no fun for anybody around me. It's kind of how it goes. Now, I had a friend back in New England. His name was Scott. And he's another believer. And he had a strategy to deal with this. His strategy was that when he played games to correct himself, he went completely the other extreme. Right? So you'd be playing board games. And we had this board game we played called Settlers of Catan. You guys know that game? We got into it for a while. And it's this crazy board game, and you go around, you build little settlements and trade routes. It's kind of a role-playing game, you know, and it's like five people play, and they're all playing against each other, you know, and it's a great way to lose friendships, essentially. And so what he would do, he would come and play, and whenever you had a good roll or something good happened for you, he'd say, "Oh, that's great! That's so cool!" And whenever he had the opportunity to stick it to you, he would instead, like, give away his trade route to you or something like that. It's like giving you the pot in poker. He'd say, "You know, I don't really want this. Here, you have it." And he would essentially try to lose and make you feel really good about what was happening for your player, right? And he kept himself joyful, and he sort of defeated that intensity, that, you know, that sort of thing that seizes us when we play games. That was his strategy. The problem was, it wasn't any fun to play with him, right? Because he wouldn't compete, you know? I sort of defeated the purpose. So our sort of game ring fell apart. But two strategies that we could take to playing games, right? We could totally get intense about the wrong sort of things, right? Or we could just really concentrate on the fact that it's a game, you know? And we could just be so into being free from it in the competition and intensity that we could just kind of be foolish and clownish. Right? Two different ways to cope with the problem. So, who wants money? Who would like some money tonight? Good. Raise your hands. Who wants money? Yeah? You guys want money? All right. $10 for you. Who else wants money? Here, that's $10 for you. Somebody I don't know. Who wants money? Somebody I don't know? Here you go. Go ahead, take it. Just be greedy. All right. Everybody has money. I'm so happy. Everybody has money. Feel free to keep that money. You all got $10, right? Some of it in fives, some of it in tens, so I didn't have three $10 bills. You could keep that money if you want, all three of you, or one of you could trade it in for this envelope. All right? Think about it. Who would like to trade in their $10, free and clear, $10 for the envelope? Your fiance is egging you on. I think that's a disqualification. Who wants it? Who wants it? You want to keep your $10? Or you want to trade it in for what's in the little white envelope. All right, here she comes, here she comes. She didn't have the $10 to begin with, so what's it to her? What's your name?
Sonny.
Sonny?
Yeah. I gave $5 to her, and then she gave it back.
So you were already sharing. Oh, isn't that nice? All right, so here's your little white envelope. Go ahead and I'm going to stick this in my pocket. And you go ahead and open the envelope and tell people what you got.
$20.
$20! Oh, how about that? Well, that little white envelope. You, you started with 10, you had 20. Sonny, you could keep that little white envelope. Or you could trade it in on the slightly larger white envelope. Now, of course, we don't know what's in this envelope. It's okay. I want the little sunny card too. All right. All right, see what you got in that envelope.
$40.
All right, way to go, way to go. Wow. You're so greedy. We just met. You're already greedy for my money. You got $40. You're not satisfied with that? Because you could keep that $40. Well, you could trade it in for what's in the slightly larger envelope. Making no guarantees about what's in the envelope. She was the first to run up. So you could keep the $40, or you could trade it in for what's in the manila. Everybody. What's it got? Oh, my gosh. Sonny, Sonny, Sonny. Are you sure you want to do this? That's $40.
I didn't have it to begin with.
You didn't have it. You were going to share 20 with your friend, right?
I gave her the 5 at the beginning.
So she's out $5, but you're up 40. Sure. What if I would offer you 60 instead of what's in the envelope? Which is it going to be?
Well, I'll give the 60 back to you at the end of the night, so just move
out. Oh, no, this is yours. This is free and clear money. Free and clear money. 60 or the envelope? All right. Wait, what if... $70 or the envelope? Cold, hard cash, $70 or the envelope? She'll take the envelope. All right. Say, I didn't warn you.
$100.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you've broken the bank. It's your money. You can do with it whatever you want. $100 free and clear.
Or?
You're just so greedy. You're not satisfied with $100. You came in tonight with nothing. You have $100. You're not satisfied with it.
You can keep $100.
No, it's your money. I don't want the $100. Okay. This is set aside for some generous soul who's going to share with her friend $100.
I actually know someone.
You know someone who could use the $100. So you're pulling that I'm a generous person sort of routine on us. All right, fine. Go and share the $100 with your friends. You could keep it, or you could take this slightly larger manila envelope. $100 or what's ever in this very large, very, oh, it's so heavy. You're going to take the envelope.
Sure.
That's $100 cold hard cash. Yeah, you're going to consult your friend who needs the $100? Who's on the $100 bill?
I never checked.
Yeah. Who knows?
Franklin, I don't know.
So Benjamin. So a Benjamin.
I teach a lot about my wallet.
A Benjamin or the large manila envelope. Okay, what if $140 for the large manila envelope? All right, $150 for the large envelope. $200. Give it up for Sonny. You could keep that $200 or... No way. I don't have any more envelopes up here. Just cash. But I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. I'll make you a deal. You could keep that $200 free and clear. Your money to share, splurge, do whatever you want. Or you could give it to me now and accept something that I bring in next week. Keep the $200 tonight and walk. Or you could give it to me and the people who know me best are telling you to keep it. So I don't have anything more tonight, but I'll bring in something next week. I have in my office. You can have that. Or you can keep the $200 and walk tonight. Everybody who works with me in ministry is yelling to keep it. What about the peanut gallery? What do you say? Keep the money? Give it back? I'll say, who thinks she should keep it? Applause. Who thinks she should trade it in now for something next to get it next to it? That's $200. You're gonna give it to me for a potential pack of gum.
Yeah. I didn't have the $200 to begin with.
How does your friend feel about this?
The friend I was gonna give the money to?
Yeah, now if you kept the $200, would you give her $5? Or 100?
I'd probably give it a whole
200. Yeah, right. All right, there you go. She played it. $200. Now, Chris, you had $10, or would you like to trade it in for what's in the envelope?
Yeah.
Too bad. Too bad. Thank you for playing. We will continue this next week. All right. What did we notice about the game? What do we notice about that particular game?
Only one person kept coming back.
Only one person kept coming back. Was it good for that person or bad for that person?
Kind of
well, I mean, she's leaving with nothing, right? But the person who was most eager to risk at the beginning got rewarded, right? All right. So that's one thing. What else did we notice about the game?
Emotional.
It's an emotional game. Okay, why was it an emotional game? So every time she opened the envelope, the quantity of money got bigger and bigger and bigger. Was it easier to give up the $10 or the $200? $10. All right. So what's that? It's a measure of trust. And what exactly were you trusting?
The bigger envelope,
that bigger money. The bigger envelope, that bigger money. We'd never even met before. Why in the world would you trust that I would keep giving you bigger amounts of money? Yeah, this is your first time, I can tell. Uh-huh. All right. I should give you $200 just for saying that. All right. So the more that was at stake, right, the harder it was to give up, right? The more emotional the game got. Just, you know, the higher the quantity of cash. Okay, what else?
She had nothing to lose,
really, right? Because she came in with nothing, and that was the thing that prodded her forward. It's like, well, it's not like, you know, I'm going to lose anything net if I keep going. The result was consistently good, right? Investing in the unknown, trusting something that you didn't know, a guy that you never even met, was actually consistently rewarding, right? That was the pattern. What was the guarantee? None, right? So there was a pattern, but there was no guarantee. All right, what else can we say about the game? At the end, now we've sort of come to a point here. Sonny does not have any cash whatsoever. What can we say? We're left wondering what's next. In fact, the game isn't over, is it? Right? The end is still unknown. Right? She was willing to put in $200, and the game will pan out next week. Right? So it's all about the future, right? Good night. Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Our text tonight is found in the back of your Nightlife program. Matthew 6, 19 through 24. The next passage in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Kind of a famous passage, really. It's about storing up for yourselves treasures in heaven. This is an oft-quoted passage from the Sermon on the Mount. Actually, a lot of passages in the Sermon on the Mount are famous. The Sermon on the Mount, if you don't know, is really the central teaching of all of the faith of the Jesus movement. Pretty much the foundation of the Jesus movement is the Sermon on the Mount. It's Jesus' basic teaching. And we are getting into a section that's about money, which is actually something that, other than the kingdom of heaven itself, it's the issue that Jesus talked about more than any other issue in his entire ministry. He spoke about money. So here's what he says tonight. If you can't read the small print, it's up behind me. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If the eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And in the original text, it's you cannot serve both God and mammon, which was the god of money in that day and age. You can't serve both God, the God of heaven, and the God of money. You can't serve both God and money. Interesting little passage. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, because they can be destroyed, right? And we know that, right? Even if you're not a follower of Jesus, right? I mean, you know that. You can't take it with you, right? Is the popular saying. You could, you know, have six Rolls Royces, but when you die, you die. You know, and you get stuck in the ground, and it's all over. Decay happens. Entropy happens. If there is an afterlife, if there is an eternity after this, whatever you pursue on the earth, you know, is a silly investment, right? Because it will pass away, right? So Jesus says, invest in heaven. In other words, invest in eternity. Instead, invest in things that are eternal. Don't invest in Rolls Royces and nice watches. Invest in things that are going to last forever. He doesn't necessarily specify at this point what those things are, but he will teach a little bit on that in the passages to come in future weeks. But make investment in things that are eternal, right? Which makes sense, right? That's a better payoff. What's interesting to me in this passage is why he says we should do that, what his concern is. He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So he doesn't say, guys, if you invest in earthly stuff, if you spend all of your life accumulating wealth and money and stuff like that, in the end, you're just going to be screwed, right? Because you're not going to get to take it with you. And it's really short-term thinking, right? It's really short-term thinking. It's a dumb investment. It won't pay off in the long run. That's what he could say. But that's not what he says. Right? He says, where your treasure is, where your accumulation is, the thing that you're investing in, there your heart will be also. So the implication is, look, you invest in earthly things, you know, material wealth, cars, houses, whatever, things like that. They're not going to last. Right? And if they don't last, what's going to happen to your heart? I I hear the wheels turning. Your heart's not gonna like it. Your heart's gonna be hurt, right? Your heart's gonna be disrupted. Your heart's gonna be compromised. It's gonna stink, right? You're gonna have heart hurt. What this teaching is on really is how to protect your heart, how not to get hurt at the heart level. It's kind of like you're saying, set your heart on heavenly rewards as opposed to earthly ones, because if you pursue earthly rewards, you will find them to be temporary and insecure, and you will end up hurting your heart, which is a nice little lesson in and of itself. And then he goes into this thing about eyes. His segue is not elegant, right? He just says this thing about storing up for yourselves treasures in heaven, and then he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. All right, I'm kind of following him so far. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Now, I looked up these words in the Greek because words like good and bad can have different meanings in different languages. What it means literally is if your eyes are single and focused, right? The word good means coherent, singular in this text. So what's he saying? If you're focused on one thing, and one thing only, if your eyes are seeing clearly, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, okay, and that word bad literally means hurtful. It doesn't mean bad like morally bad. It means if your eyes are hurting you, if your eyes are compromising you, if they are disrupting you in some fashion, then your whole body will be full of darkness, right? And this has to do with the eye of the body. Like if you know, there's only one way for light to get into your body, and that's through your eyes, right? And so if your eyes are hurting you, if there's something wrong with them, then, you know, no light gets into your body, right? And so he's sort of borrowing on a biological analogy here, which makes sense. And he continues it by saying, if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And this is a phrase that loses a little something in translation, I'm afraid. But what he's saying here is, if your eyes are hurtful, what that means is that you're looking at something as if it were light, but in fact it's just pouring darkness through your eyes. Right? You're mistaking something for light. Your eyes are misfocused. They're not focused on light. They're focused on something that is, by implication, dark. And if that's the case, then your body is going to be full of darkness, right? It has to do with what you're focused on, is what this teaching is about. It doesn't come out really great in English, but that's what it is about. If you're focused on something other than the light, your whole life, your whole body will be filled with darkness. And it's a matter of focus. It's a matter of where your attention is. And if the thing that you take as light, that is the thing that you're using as light in your life, what does that mean? The thing that you're paying attention to, the thing that you've organized your life around, your ambitions around, right? If that is something other than light, oh, then you're really bad off. How great is the darkness, Jesus says, right? Because it's not like somebody can come along and tell you what the truth is, right? Somebody has to come along and tear your attention away from whatever it is you're pursuing, right? So it's a much bigger deal. It's really a teaching on focus. He ends it by saying, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. This attention that he's talking about, whatever it is, whatever the nature of it is, he's saying it cannot be divided. It's one way or the other. You cannot serve both God and money, is the punchline. Right, you cannot serve both God and money. And in the terms of the beginning of the teaching, you cannot simultaneously think of eternity and the present. You cannot live simultaneously according to eternity and the present, would be a better way to say it. You can't live both ways. You can't. Because you wind up hating one or the other, God or money. The question that falls out of this for me is, how come you end up hating one of the masters, right? How come you can't have it both ways, right? How come you can't serve both God and money? I think it's like this. If your heart is set on earthly goodies, you know, whatever that might be, if your heart is set on a really cool pair of shoes, whatever. And serving God means that you must sacrifice them for some reason. Right? You must go to some tribe where they don't wear shoes. You must lose them. Or you must give them away to someone who's barefoot, something like that. Right? If obedience to God means that, what's going to happen is that you're going to end up being mad at God, right? Because your heart was set on the shoes. There's going to be a tension. Or if God rewards you with heavenly goodies, if you're thinking about God that way, I'm going to serve God to get wealth. Right? If God doesn't come through with the wealth in the way that you want it, you're going to get really mad at God. If he doesn't pay you off with cash, you're going to get upset. So you're serving God, but you're still struggling with rent. If your attention is divided, if you're at all paying attention to your earthly circumstances, you're going to get mad. You're going to get mad at God. So the division is hard. Worse yet, if your heart is set on heavenly rewards, but you're divided in your attention, becoming rich might convince you that God is rewarding you. Right? If you're mixing up God and money, right, you might conclude, hey, I have quite a bit of money in my bank account. I must be doing really well in God's eyes. And it can mislead you that way. Right? And that's just setting you up for a fall. And what about the opposite? Why would serving God lead you to hate the God of money? There are some things in life I hate because they disgust me. And then there are some things in life I hate because they delight me. Right? Nobody hates wine as much as a recovering alcoholic, right? Because the recovering alcoholic also loves it, right? Also has a track record. They just sort of worshipped alcohol, right? So someone who's gone through that, somebody knows how much of a hold something has on them, will end up hating it, right? You can't compromise at all. You have to stay very far away from it, right? It's an extreme, right? I mean, it really is neatly divided. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about. And he's talking about money because it has that quality. It has that quality of addiction to it. When I said, who wants money? How many people did not want the money? Right? Everybody raised their hand, right? Oh, me, right? And, you know, gotcha. Just kidding. Nobody in the world despises money, naturally, right? If you are thinking about how you're going to pay your rent next week, it is very difficult not to have fond feelings about having money, right? Money does not naturally disgust anybody. It is a built-in addiction. It's automatic. It's one thing in the world that everybody really likes. Nobody is uncomfortable when somebody hands them a wad of bills. Nobody thinks, oh, this is sick, right? They might think, oh, now I can do something generous with it. Now I can share it with my friend. Or they might think, well, you know, now I can buy a really nice dinner or something like that. But nobody just is revolted by having money. Jesus knows this, right? It's sort of like the drug and the addict, right? And you have to hate it because y'all love it. Right? We all do. We all really are in love with money. Hate it. You have to hate it because the fact is you love it. Right? And it's one of those universal laws. How can you know if you're free from money? How can you tell? How can you tell if you're addicted to it? I would argue, just if you never really consider this at all, if you've never gone through a season of your life where you've really broken free of money, I would argue you're almost certainly addicted to money. You're almost certainly addicted to wealth. That'll be my argument, and we will explore this as the weeks go by. But it's because you love it, yeah, naturally. So if you haven't paid attention and deliberately tried to free yourself from it, you're probably addicted to it. Probably. I think that's the human condition. Right, I'm not judging you because, you know, you're a particularly messy crowd. Although, I won't get into that. So how can you tell, right? If you're interested in the experiment, how can you tell if you are free from the God of money? Does it have to do with being rich or being poor? No. Rich people can love money. Poor people can love money for want of it, right? Because their life has to be about money so they can survive. That doesn't matter. I had a pastor friend who used to say frequently in his sermons, you'll know if you've given something over to God if he takes it away. The way to know if you're free from something is when God takes it away. And short of that, there's really no true way to figure it out. So, what I suggest is a couple things. One is I suggest a fast from money. Right? You know what a fast is? Like a basic fast is you go without eating for a while. Right? That's sort of fast from food. I would suggest a fast from money, which means one of two things. Either you take your money, or a very large portion of it, all that you know is not already spoken for, and you give it away. Give all of it away. I've spoken about a Christian friend and mentor I used to have in college who would preach. At least once in their lifetime, every Christian should give away all that they possess. And at that particular time, he had done it twice. And, you know, some of you have, like, children to feed and stuff like that, so it might be different things for different people. But it's worth thinking about, right? If you give away everything that you possess, you'll know. Right? You'll know. And that's one good way to know. Another thing you might try, sort of an intermediate step, is fast from money for a particular period of time. Like, take a month. And when you leave home in the morning, don't take any cash whatsoever. Right? So you can't buy anything for yourself. You can't buy anything for a month. This is interesting because you start thinking about how you're going to eat during the day and stuff like that. You start looking in your cupboards and you think, well, how much food do I have to last? And stuff like that. You start running out of fresh things. You start looking at your friends in a different way, right? And you figure out, do I love my friends for what I can give them or for what I can get from them? And let me tell you, when the stomach starts growling, it really does something interesting. Right? And it's not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily that you're going to start using your friends, right? What you're going to do is really focus on the interactions and your heart and what's really going on in there. Because you're gonna feel something. So, like, a fast from money. I'm just suggesting this. I'm just suggesting that you try it as just, you know, a spiritual mentor in this community. You can give it a shot. Jesus is not saying to be poor, that you have to be poor to be free from money. He's just saying you should be willing to be poor if that's what it takes to be free from your addiction. That's how Jesus teaches it. Not necessarily my opinion, but I think that's what the Lord Jesus is saying. So much of the Sermon on the Mount thus far we've seen has to do with from whence our reward comes, right? He says, don't give offerings in church so that people see you, right? Because the people will reward you for your generosity, but what you're doing is taking that reward instead of the reward that the Lord would give you in secret later. And he says, when you pray, do not pray in public with great pomp and circumstance. Instead, pray in secret. Pray as though you're talking to your daddy. Right? And pray that his solutions would happen, his kingdom come, his will be done. Right? Pray that you are a forgiving person. Right? Not necessarily for the things you want, but for the things God knows that you need. And do that secretly. Develop a secret life with him, because then your rewards will come secretly, where nobody can see, are in the future, which nobody has yet seen. Refuse to accept payoffs from anywhere or anyone save God. So again, this theme comes up that we've been talking about for a few weeks. Let God reward you, which is a fair summary of following Jesus. If you had to sort of boil it down to a bumper sticker, let God reward you. Don't take your reward in cash. That would just be dumb. Don't take your reward in fame or people's praises or anything like that, because that would be dumb. I could boil it down even further. Instead of let God reward you, on my bumper sticker, it might say, not now. Not now. And that sums up a very good portion of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus looks at this rabble that's in front of him. And those of you who are at the beginning of the series will remember, these are a bunch of poor people, a bunch of wandering hippies, a bunch of foreigners, a bunch of sick people, lame people, non-religious people. And he's looking at them in their sorry estate, and he's saying, people, not now. It's later. It's then. You should be willing to turn in your $200 for what's coming next week. Okay. You now have gotten your reward in full. We've all praised you. I try to preach as Jesus preached. We shouldn't serve money, and that we should take drastic steps to get free from this, because left on its own, it will become an addiction for us, because nobody naturally hates money. I'm saying that if you need money, right, you know, some of you are in some financial straits. If you need money, I guess what I'm preaching is don't worry about it. Not now. Right? Don't worry about your now concerns. Right? I guess that's what I'm led to preach. And that's actually something that Jesus will bring up in the passage that we're doing next week. I guess what I'm telling you, I'm parodying Jesus on this, but I guess what I'm saying is don't worry about money in any way, shape, or form. Which might sound strange to you if you have a need, right? If you have some financial struggle in your life or something like that, it's easy for me to say, don't worry. Be free from it. Be free from it. Take a fast from money. You know, give away your stuff. It's really easy for me to say that. So in the small groups that we have around Nightlife, having studied these passages and the way Jesus teaches on it, we tell our small group leaders. You know, small groups are the way that we do community at Nightlife. You know, we get together, we meet during the week in small groups. We have Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, or Thursday. Small group. And we foster family, right? And so the small group leaders of those groups will tell you that if you have a need, if you have a financial need, if you have a material struggle in your life and you can't get it fixed and nothing seems to be coming through, your small group leader will personally take care of it for you. Small group leaders? That's part of their deal. And you may not be in a small group, or maybe your small group is having a hard time coming through for you. So I feel like to preach that, to preach what I preach tonight, to parrot this teaching of Jesus, this is what I have to say. If you have some financial need, if you have some insoluble financial struggle in your life, if you're up against something and you can't see your way clear, if you need some cash, come to me, and I personally will take care of it for you. I will give you big fat envelopes full of money. If I don't say that, I don't really believe what I'm preaching. So I just want to make that guarantee. Maybe I'm a little farther than some of you down the path of faith, so sort of an elder brother. I'll just say that to you. If you need cash, come to me. If you can't get it any other way, if we can't figure it out as a community in small groups or something like that, I personally, with the help of my lovely wife, will take care of it for you. And I'm hoping that we get to a place where all of us can say that. Will be totally free. My money is your money. If I don't know you at all, and you come up and ask me for money tonight, I will not give it to you. Because, come on, I don't know you at all. Except you, whom I gave $200, but you sacrificed it. But if you're part of the family, that's how we operate. That's how Nightlife has to be. Because I think that's what Jesus taught. Amen?
Amen.
I'm going to invite us just to pray for a couple of minutes and